Weekly Spooky is brought to you by our generous supporters on Patreon. Get access to exclusive podcasts, videos, and more for as little as $1 a month when you go to weeklyspooky.com and click on the Patreon link. Your support has gotten us to 100 episodes, so join up today and help us create another 100 and beyond. Head over to weeklyspooky.com and join the Patreon.
Scared. Come with me. You will experience tales of horror, ghosts, and death. It is not recommended for the weak at heart. Listen in the dark. It's more fun that way. This is Weekly Spooky.
Hello, my friends. It's Wednesday, and you know what that means. It's time for a little bit of spooky in your weekly. And it's Thanksgiving Eve for my American listeners, a day of big meals and showing your appreciation. But sometimes the holiday gatherings can be a little bit less benign than we hope. And that's what this week's story is about, but we'll get to that in just a moment. First, I want to say thank you so much for joining us today. If it's your first time, or you've listened many times before, make sure you hit the subscribe button on your favorite podcast app. And while you're there, leave us a rating, because it really does make a difference. And you'll want to be subscribed, because we have many, many terrifying tales of holiday horrors ready and raring to go all through December into New Year's. And if you love what we're doing here at Weekly Spooky, we'd appreciate your support very much. All you have to do is go to weeklyspooky.com, and there are lots of options for ways to help us out. You can buy yourself a brand new Weekly Spooky Ugly Christmas sweater printed on red fleece. I'm wearing one right now, and it's keeping me nice and toasty as I read chilling stories. Or you can click on Patreon and become a monthly donor, which not only keeps us going every single week, but also gives you access to all kinds of exclusive and fun content. I promise you, it's worth your while. Anyway, my friends, it's about time to head back to Strickfield. That's right, the little Ohio town that permeates the Weekly Spooky universe, where vampires, monsters, and killers of all kinds run rampant. But of course, it is a small American town, so that means it's Thanksgiving there too. So why don't we take a little gander at what goes on this Thanksgiving after a quick word from our sponsor. This episode is brought to you by Babysitter Massacre, Daddy's Little Killer, available on Amazon.com in ebook, paperback, and audiobook. A good babysitter is hard to find, especially when they're all dead. Larkin's first night with the Babysitter's Club has her filling in for a friend that's blowing off work for a hot date. The simple little lie will have dire consequences that trigger a series of unthinkable events and spurs a killer's need for revenge. With the bodies and suspects stacking up, can Larkin unmask the Kohler slasher? Or will she become another victim of Daddy's Little Killer? From the twisted mind of Weekly Spooky writer David O'Hanlon comes the first book in the Babysitter Massacre franchise series created by me. So check it out right now. Babysitter Massacre, Daddy's Little Killer. Available on ebook, paperback, and now audiobook at Amazon.com.
Fiendsgiving by Rob Fields.
Thanksgiving night last year. Come on, Seth! Mandy Craven cried from the back seat. We're going to be late. I'm driving as fast as I can, Seth Bergman muttered. Relax. I can get out and crawl as slow as you drive, Mandy persisted. Seth was annoyed. You could have gone by yourself, you know. You want to get out that bad, I'll gladly pull over. But we're going to be late, Mandy further persisted. You know how upset Chelsea Mirren can be. Seriously, what a spoiled fucking bitch. Alan Hertz looked over his shoulder at her while sitting in the passenger's side. Better late than dead. You don't understand, Mandy shrieked. If we're late to Chelsea's Friendsgiving, she'll go ballistic on all of us. Don't you remember what happened at her Halloween party? You wanted to pull over and pick up geeky little Aileen Donnerly when she was walking to the party. We were 5 minutes late, and Chelsea practically had an aneurysm. That bitch ripped into me, and I wasn't even driving. Seth was really annoyed. Hey, Alan and I didn't even want to go to Chelsea Mirren's Halloween party, but you practically twisted our arms. What do you have against Aileen Donnerly? Alan demanded. Mandy glared at him. Aileen's a skinny, geeky little skank who's really on Chelsea's good side, especially after she was tutoring her. I think you're just jealous because you're not in Chelsea's circle of friends, Seth said. Mandy lunged forward. Fuck you, I have a much better body and a nicer rack compared to Aileen Donnerly, and she picks Aileen Donnerly over me? What the fuck? Whoa, if you hate Chelsea and Aileen so much, why are you demanding we hurry up to get to Chelsea's house? Alan asked. Mandy didn't answer right away. Then Seth answered for her. Because Mandy heard there's an opening on the cheerleading squad. Tammy Rich lost her eligibility when she flunked too many classes last midterm. Mandy wants to try and sweet-talk Chelsea into giving her the opening. Turn here! Mandy suddenly cried. Here! Seth quickly turned onto the road by Strickfield Chemicals. His tires squealed. Careful, Seth, Alan advised. Let's get to Chelsea's alive, if possible. Just hurry up, please, Mandy cried. Mandy, shut up, okay? Seth shouted. Fuck you, she shouted back. If we're late, we'll just explain why, Alan said, trying to restore some kind of order. Hey, Seth, here's our turn. Whoa, slow down. You make this turn too fast and we'll end up taking some of the plant's fence with us. I know what I'm doing, Seth replied. Hang on! Seth turned too quickly and sharply, running the red light. As Seth straightened the car, a small chemical truck was entering the road almost directly in front of them. Seth! Stop! Oh shit! Mandy screamed. Stop, Seth! Seth quickly jammed on the brakes and turned the wheel to try and avoid a collision with the truck. However, he'd been driving too fast, and slammed into the vehicle side to side. The car's engine sputtered out soon after. Seth and Alan had been wearing their seatbelts, so they avoided injuries. Mandy had managed to brace herself and was also unhurt, but she had glass all over her from where the back window on the driver's side had shattered from the crash. "Everybody all right?" Alan asked. "Oh my God!" Mandy uttered quickly. Oh, man! Seth screamed. My car's wrecked! Alan looked at Seth. You shouldn't have been going so fast. Seth glared at Alan and pointed to the truck. He's the dumb son of a bitch who pulled out right in front of us. Alan threw open his door and got out. A few seconds later, Seth screamed in frustration. Then the driver of the chemical truck approached Alan. What do you think you're doing? Alan shouted at him. The driver screamed a curse at Alan and then added, You stupid kids should have been watching where you were going. Us? Alan screamed back. You pulled out right in front of us. Back in the car, as Alan and the chemical truck driver continued arguing with each other, Mandy felt warm sprinkles on her arm that began to burn slightly. She slowly turned and saw that the sprinkles were coming from the damaged nozzle on the chemical truck. To her horror, the nozzle was pointing right at her. Oh shit, Mandy choked out as she saw the liquid chemical slightly spraying instead of sprinkling. Seth, look! Seth turned her way and saw what she was pointing at. Let's move, Seth cried. He quickly moved to the open passenger side door and got out. Just as Mandy was moving to climb over the seat to follow Seth, the damaged nozzle burst. Mandy was soaked instantly, and she screamed when she felt the burning sensations everywhere on her body. Seth quickly went back into the front seat and reached his left hand out for Mandy. Some of the chemical splashed onto his hand. He cried out in pain and quickly pulled it away. By then, Alan had returned to the car and pulled Seth out. Suddenly, Seth's hand had caught on fire. Seth screamed in both surprise and pain. Once the guys were away from the car, the fire on Seth's hand had gone out. Seth started crying from the intense pain in what was left of his hand. Alan looked back to Seth's car in desperation as Mandy continued to be sprayed with the chemical. The driver of the truck had already radioed for a containment crew once he saw what had happened. That was all that could be done for Mandy Craven, since the driver wouldn't go anywhere near Seth's car or the damaged nozzle. That evening, in the hospital morgue, a medical examiner had Mandy's naked corpse on the long table slab. She was going to do the autopsy on Mandy and try to determine what the chemical had done to her to cause her to die, in spite of the fact that she remained nicely preserved. After the examiner finished putting on her rubber gloves, she picked up her scalpel and was ready to make her first incision. Suddenly, Mandy opened her eyes and sat up straight. The examiner, not believing what she had just seen, dropped the scalpel and screamed. "Where am I?" Mandy asked. The examiner quickly ran to her phone. In Seth's room, Mandy's friends were anxiously waiting for her. Though Seth had hours ago undergone an emergency amputation, he wanted to see for himself that Mandy was still alive. He wondered how she would look, or if her still being alive really was a hoax. After all, that chemical had damaged his left hand so badly it had to be amputated. Seth's eyes widened when he saw Mandy enter the room, wearing a hospital-issued gown. She still looked as beautiful and vibrant as she did before the accident. "Mandy!" Alan rushed over to her and hugged her tightly. "Are you okay?" Mandy hugged him back. "I'm fine. In fact, I've never felt better." "What did the doctor say?" Seth demanded harshly. "Seth, what's wrong?" Mandy asked, surprised by his tone. She moved away from Alan. When she saw the stainless steel hook in place of where his left hand used to be, she gasped and wished that she hadn't asked that question. "What's wrong?" Seth held up his hook hand. "I lost my hand because of that chemical getting on it. That truck douses you down like a fire hose, and nothing even happened to you." "Seth, come on," Alan implored. "Don't do this. You should be glad we're all alive." "Get the fuck out of here, Mandy," Seth screamed. He glared at Alan. "You get out too." Mandy started to cry. Alan took her hand and guided her toward the door. "I don't ever want to see either of you again," Seth yelled behind them. "It's because of you, Mandy, that I'm a cripple now." When Mandy heard this, she tore out of Alan's grip and spun around to face Seth. "How dare you?" she shouted. "That's not fair." "Bullshit. You're the one who kept yelling, 'Hurry up, Seth, remember?'" He pointed at her with his good hand. "You're the one obsessed with getting on the cheerleading squad and getting in bed with Chelsea Mirren." Mandy pointed back. "I wasn't the one driving like a fucking maniac." "I don't want to talk to you anymore, Mandy. Or you, Alan," Seth then screamed. "Just go away now." Alan took Mandy's hand. This time, she didn't stop him as he led her out of the room. Once they were gone, Seth looked at his new hook and sobbed. Thanksgiving night, 1 year later. To be honest, I'm not really that big into Thanksgiving. It just hasn't been the same without Mom and Dad. I have my older brother, Martin, but Martin's usually working on Thanksgiving. Mirren Automotive is closed both Thanksgiving and Black Friday, but Denoyer's Grill never closes. Martin's picking up hours by working Thanksgiving. At least Denoyer's pays their people overtime for working on the holidays. Things are different this year, however. Martin will still be working at Denoyer's Grill for Thanksgiving, but Bells and I are on our way to Chelsea Mirren's house for Friendsgiving. Chelsea would actually rather stay in Strictfield than go on family trips. And why wouldn't she? She has that nice house all to herself inside that gated community that the Mirrens live in. Believe me when I say that she takes full advantage of that. She hosts cheerleading parties after our games. She threw this awesome Halloween party last month. Everybody loved Belle's costume and makeup as a vampire. The funny part, Belle's wasn't even wearing a costume. Belle's is a vampire, but a very unique one. For one thing, she can walk in the daylight. Ah, but I'm getting off track here, aren't I? Ever since Belle's and I got on the cheerleading squad, things have totally changed for us. Now we're both actually popular. Belle's and I even get invited to things. We really didn't want to go to any of Chelsea's parties, but she can be pretty persuasive. Belle's doesn't like her, but she sensed that Chelsea was being sincere about having us come and suggested we try the Halloween party, so we go. And we both had a lot of fun. Now Chelsea's parents are gone for Thanksgiving, as they are every year. Chelsea likes to host Friendsgiving at her house. She doesn't have any of us bring anything. She has plenty of food to go around. She even promised Belle's to have lots of food just for her if she would come. By now, news of Belle's monster appetite has spread from Denoyer's Grill to the halls of Strictfield High. Chelsea lives in the Mirren gated community and texted me the code to get in. Belle's and I are almost to Chelsea's. I'm telling you, Einie, if people at this fucking thing start taking bets on how many turkeys I'll be putting away, Belle grumbles. I give her a warm smile. It'll be okay, Belle's. When we reach Chelsea's, the front door suddenly opens. Chelsea shoots right out onto the porch. Oh my God, Bella, Aileen, you two really came! Why wouldn't we? Belle's mutters. You did invite us, right? Yes, I did, yes, I did, yes, I did, yes, I did! Chelsea's always this vibrant. It's like she's on a constant caffeine high, though you've never seen her drink coffee or even an energy drink. When we get on the porch, she snatches me to her and gives me a big hug. Then she hugs Belle's. Thank you so much for coming. She pulls away from Belle's and looks at both of us. Can you believe it? Those other bitches on the squad call me at the last minute and say they can't come. Her eyes open wide. They could have just told me themselves when I personally invited them to Friendsgiving at cheerleading practice last week. Belle's and I look at each other. What? What? Come on, you two, just say it. What's wrong with me? Chelsea demands. Maybe it's your overly abundant charisma? Belle's replies. I'm not sure if Belle's is being serious or sarcastic. But that works for you as our cheerleading captain, right? I add, backing up Belle's. Chelsea looks from both me to Belle's and sighs. That's what I love about you two. You always give it to me straight. She steps aside now. Well, come in! As soon as Belle's and I walk in, we're both hit with the smell of Thanksgiving dinner. Yeah, I'm definitely ready to eat, Einie, Belle says. We hear the door close, and Chelsea walks past us. Of course, Bella, and like I said, I have plenty of food, just for you. Suddenly, I get a video call from Martin. I've got to take this, Chelsea. Of course, Chelsea replies. I step back outside and talk to Martin. What's up? You better send Bella over here to Denoyer's right away, Einstein. Martin always calls me Einstein on the count of my big brain. Martin turns his phone. A couple of vampires are really fighting it out here. What am I supposed to see? Then I see stuff. Flying. By itself. Vampires can't cast a reflection, so they won't show up on video either. I'll send Belle's over. Martin and I disconnect. I open the door and call Belle's outside. Once I explain things to her... That fucking figures, Belle's mutters. Okay, I'll head that way. Tell Chelsea I'll be back. Just play the family emergency card for me. Belle's leaps away in the direction of Denoyer's Grill. I turn around and head back in. Is everything okay? Chelsea asks. A family emergency came up, I tell her. Belle's will be back soon. Chelsea seems disappointed, but she brings me into the dining room where the rest of the guests are. Seth Bergman, Alan Hertz, and Mandy Craven are sitting together on one end of the table. Some other people I've seen at school but don't know are also there. The thing that always catches everybody's attention about Seth is the hook he has for a left hand, which he got a year ago today. It sounds like Alan is telling everybody the story. "Okay," Alan begins, "this couple's out on a date. They're making out on a hilltop a few miles away from a nearby prison. The guy finds some romantic music on the radio. When he does, an announcer breaks in with a news bulletin saying a murderer's escaped from a nearby prison. He has a hook in place of one of his hands. When the couple hears this, they quickly roll up the car windows and lock the doors. Then the girl gets scared and wants to go home. The guy, he's not worried. When they argue about it, the killer suddenly breaks through the driver's side window with his hook and kills the guy. He kills the girl too, shortly after."
"Whoa, Alan, no," Seth quickly interjects. "If you're going to tell that story, at least tell it right."
"That was how it happened," Alan protests.
"Bullshit."
Mandy disagrees and takes a drink from an unmarked glass bottle. "The killer didn't kill the couple."
"Then what really happened?"
Alan demands, challenging her. Mandy smiles.
"Well, the couple drives away. They go to Woody's Drive-In downtown for some food. The boy gets out of the car and goes around to open the passenger door for the girl. There, to both his horror and a car hop's, is the escaped lunatic's hook hanging on the door handle. Later that night, the killer ends up being killed by the Angel of Death. That actually happened here, in Strickfield."
"That's right," Seth agrees. Alan suddenly turns and looks right at me.
"You better watch it next time you and some guy are making out somewhere secluded and romantic. Seth here might come along and get you with his hook."
"And I will, too." Seth holds up his hook hand. Chelsea stares at Seth in disbelief. "How can you just let people joke around about your hand like that?"
Seth becomes serious.
"What do you want me to do? Go out and hack people up?"
"What's stopping you?" Alan asks.
Seth closes his eyes and bows his head slightly. "I had no one to blame but myself for what happened last Thanksgiving. I was the one driving the car recklessly."
"Look, it's over now," Mandy says. "Can we please try to get on with our lives here?"
She takes another drink from her bottle. Seth looks at her sharply.
"Easy for you to say, Mandy. You don't have to live with the fact that you're going to be a freak for the rest of your life. The kind of freak people our age tell stories about at night around a campfire. Or at a Friendsgiving gathering."
"I thought you said you were used to it, Seth," Alan says.
"I never said that," Seth contradicts.
"You just assumed I was. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'd like to be alone." He doesn't give anybody a chance to speak as he gets up and storms off. Mandy sighs and takes another drink from her bottle. "And then, I'm having a very bad feeling. I hope Bells will be back soon."
I'm sitting in the living room with a plate of food and talking to a girl named Lisa Walcott. I learned that these other people I don't know from Strickfield High either weren't doing anything special for Thanksgiving or didn't have any place to go, so Chelsea invited them. Lisa and I were just talking about whatever, then she tells me she'll be right back. She gets up and heads to the bathroom. I watch the TV and see that Planes, Trains, and Automobiles is on. It's at that funny scene where Steve Martin and John Candy are in bed together in the motel room. Then, we all hear a blood-curdling scream. Everybody gets up and heads straight to the bathroom that Lisa's in. One of the other guests I don't know is lying on the floor. Dead. As I'm looking at things closer, I can see the body is almost white. There's a big gaping hole in the body's throat. But very little blood. And then my mind moves to the one decisive thing that could possibly make an incision like that. Seth Bergman has a hook for a hand. He got upset and defensive earlier,
and went away from everybody. "What's going on?" Mandy asked.
"Somebody call the police," Chelsea cries.
"I can't find my phone,"
one person says.
"Neither can I," Alan says. I go to pull out my phone.
"Huh?
Where's my phone? It's not in my back pocket." Chelsea leaves the bathroom and goes to the kitchen counter.
"Seriously, where the hell is my phone? I laid it right here."
Chelsea turns and reaches for the landline, picks up the receiver, and punches 911. Then she slams the receiver back into place.
"It's dead. Seriously, what is going on here?"
Chelsea points to some of us.
"You folks stay here. I'm going next door to call 911.
But as Chelsea tries to open the front door,
"Oh, come on!"
Then she points to me.
"Aileen, the back door!"
I rush to the back door and try it.
"I can't open it, Chelsea."
Chelsea moves to a window and tries to open it. With no success, she moves and goes into the den.
"Oh, you have got to be fucking kidding me!"
I walk to the den and find Chelsea freaking out.
"What is it?"
She grabs my arm and points to the small control panel. On the screen it says, "Security system enabled."
"The security system's on. The windows and the doors are locked tight. We can't leave. And nobody can come in. And somebody damaged the controls."
"We can just break a window, right?" I asked. Chelsea shakes her head.
"My dad really sank money into our security system. The glass is unbreakable. We're stuck here."
I keep calm, but I'm getting scared.
"Where are you, Bells?"
Chelsea and I return to the kitchen where everybody else is now. Mandy Craven speaks up.
"We've got to find Seth. He's got to be around here somewhere. I know he's still pissed off about what happened a year ago, but I never thought he'd resort to murder."
And then I have another feeling in the pit of my stomach. I move past the others and head back to the bathroom. Lisa Walcott is still in there with the body. I lower myself to look at the neck wound again. Closer now. I'm not a doctor, but I'm smart enough to know that a hook did not do this. The hook would have pierced the skin and the throat. I mean, you would have to go right into the throat itself. Looking closer, I see bite marks. I use logic more often than anything else. In fact, I don't even believe in God, but I'm going on record in saying that someone in this house bit this person and drank up all the blood. There's got to be another vampire in this house, or something else that drinks blood.
"What are you doing in here?"
a voice snaps. I look up to see Seth Bergman.
"Nothing."
When Lisa sees it's Seth, she's scared for her life.
"Seth, please, don't kill us," she begs him.
He raises his hook hand to us.
"Shut up, both of you.
Just listen."
"Seth, we can get you some help," Lisa utters as she starts crying.
"I said shut up," Seth screams.
"Where's Mandy? Tell me."
"Why?" Lisa demands, really crying now.
"So you can kill us too?"
Seth looks at her with wide eyes.
"You don't understand."
He's really hysterical now. Suddenly, Mandy appears. Seth turns to Mandy. He points to her with his good hand.
"You, I'm going to kill you."
"I don't think so, Seth," she purrs. Mandy hisses loudly, grabs Seth tightly, and bites deep into his neck. He screams as she drinks him quickly. I don't even have time to move to try and save him before Mandy throws his drained body to the floor.
"Looks like Seth was the killer, after all," Mandy murmurs in a morbid tone.
"Or at least, that's what it's going to look like when I'm all through here." Alan was there. He had seen what just happened.
"Why, Mandy? Why?"
"Like you even have to ask," Mandy answers scornfully. "The accident 1 year ago today."
Alan looks confused. "But you're fine, Mandy. You look fine."
Mandy laughs insanely. You think I'm fine? Alan, dear, I am not fine. Far from it. In fact, I am quite dead. She giggles a little. The chemical spray killed me last Thanksgiving. My coming back to life was an unexpected side effect. I seemed to be okay for a few weeks. Then I accidentally cut my finger and saw that my blood was brown. I finally realized that my heart wasn't beating, and yet I was still moving and talking and rotting. Are we learning anything yet? I'm a decaying corpse, a zombie, since I woke up in the hospital morgue that night. How come you don't look any different then? I demand. Mandy holds up her unmarked bottle that she's been drinking from. Formaldehyde. As long as I drink this shit, much like drinking living blood, it spreads through my body and preserves me. That's how I don't decay and rot in front of your faces. Or stink. I had to stay nicely preserved so that I can get my revenge. Alan was in the accident with Seth and me, but he hardly got hurt. As for Seth, he only lost his hand. It wasn't exactly fair for them to go on living when I died. Now was it? And Seth's pain was nothing compared to mine that day. Or now. None of you could possibly imagine. Chelsea appears. You locked us in here. Yeah, bitch, I did, Mandy shouted. I owe you for denying me a place on the cheerleading squad, and because your daddy owns Strickfield Chemicals. Daddy didn't tell you, did he? He covered up everything from the accident a year ago. In fact, I drank up both of your parents when they left for their trip. She glares at me. Now I'm going to drink up little Aileen Donnerly here. You have no right to be on the cheerleading squad, you little fucking mouse. Mandy screams with rage and knocks everybody away from her with strength I've only seen bells possess. I turn and run. Nowhere to run, geek, Mandy yells. I find the nearest door and open it to go down into the basement. Just as I pull the door shut, Mandy rips it away. I scream and move, but Mandy shoves me down the stairs. I fall over until I land flat on my back. I groan and make myself get up. I got all your phones and destroyed them, Mandy says. I even learned Chelsea's family security system code. It was all perfect. All I had to do was get Chelsea to invite me over for her Friendsgiving. Now I can kill and drink you all. And you're next. I quickly duck a wild swing. Then I run over to the fireplace and pick up a poker to use as a weapon. As Mandy's almost upon me, I swing and hit her hard in the face. I scream when I see the left side of Mandy's face land on the floor at my feet. Mandy glares at me hatefully. Her right face is dead flesh preserved by formaldehyde or whatever blood she drinks. And her left face is bare muscle and skull with the eye still in its place. Icky brown blood runs from her exposed left face and down her clothes now. Mandy hisses loudly and advances menacingly towards me. I turn and run. Mandy's right behind me. Mandy can really run for a dead girl. I quickly run back upstairs. Come back to me, you four-eyed little bitch, Mandy yells. When I reach the top, I feel hands grab me and pull me off to the side. Chelsea turns and shoves me down a hallway. Go! As Chelsea's running behind me, she gets tackled by Mandy. Shit! I turn around, but Chelsea motions for me to go. Get out of here, Aileen! All you had to do was give me a place on the cheerleading squad, Mandy growls. But no, you give all the fucking freaks places instead! Mandy and Chelsea are wrestling on the floor now as I move away. You're one to talk, Mandy! Chelsea hisses. I turn and see. Yes, there's a big shotgun hanging above the fireplace. I climb up on a chair to grab it and return to help Chelsea. I practically pee my pants when I see Mandy's got Chelsea flat on her back, and Mandy's mouth is open wide enough to where she can possibly bite off Chelsea's whole head. Chelsea closes her eyes and screams as Mandy lowers her mouth. And Mandy's head explodes all over Chelsea's face and upper body. Mandy's corpse drops, and the neck area starts pouring more sickly brown blood all over Chelsea. Chelsea shrieks, then screams. I drop the shotgun and move to help Chelsea. It's a few hours later when the police and ambulances are gone. The police got statements out of all of us. Funny thing, you'd think we'd lie about what happened here. But Chelsea actually suggested we all tell the truth. So, we all told the truth, to the best of our knowledge. The police didn't really give us a hard time. I'm still wondering if they believed us or not. None of us were arrested, but we lost people as a result of Mandy. Anyway, Chelsea pretty much let all of us go. I know she still has to clean herself up yet. I've only walked a little ways away from the Mirren gated community when someone catches up to me. Hey, you. I'm overjoyed now. Bells! What happened? Bells explains that she had arrived at DeNoyer's Grill to break up the fight. As it turned out, the two vampires fighting were both parts of rival clans. The clans themselves actually came to the diner. Bells had to really work to take out all those vampires and make sure that nobody human was harmed. She still has some blood on her. Then she notices I've got a little of Mandy's blood on me. What happened to you, Einy? I tell Bells everything that happened. Bells gives me a sympathetic smile. I'm so sorry I didn't make it back. I'm so glad you're okay. You did pretty good without me there with you. I smile a little. Yeah, I guess I did, didn't I? Then I say, I think Chelsea's pretty upset right now. Bells shrugs. Best to let her calm down. Then she changes the subject. Looks like we both never got to have Thanksgiving dinner. How about we go home, get cleaned up, and get some roasted turkey at DeNoyer's? I smile and sigh. Sounds good to me, Bells.
Who's hungry? I know I am. Another delightful trip to the sleepy town of Strickfield, Weekly Spooky's very own burg of horrors, violence, death, and everything else you might happen to enjoy about the holidays. I hope you enjoyed that tale of Thanksgiving as much as I did, and I hope you all have wonderful plans to eat food with people you care about and appreciate the things you have. Speaking of appreciating the things we have, I want to take a moment to say I am very thankful to all the very kind folks who have been joining up on our Patreon. I really cannot tell you how much it means to me to have your support while I create terrifying tales for your ears every single week. And I want to say a special thank you to our brand new Patreon backers who've joined up. Thank you all so much. And a huge thank you to our Patreon podcast boosters, some folks who pay just a little extra to hear my voice say your name on the show. Those are Gino Lyons, Karen Wiemet, Jack Kerr, Jeff and George Hilton, Craig Cohen, Rob Fields, and Kevin Fry. Also want to say, humongous thank you to the folks who are buying the brand new Weekly Spooky holiday shirts and more. Going over to weeklyspooky.com and buying a little bit of merchandise is another way you can help guarantee that we bring the spooky on the weekly for another 2 years and beyond. We're preparing to head into December, and that means a whole lot of terrifying Christmas stories to make sure you're extra chilled, even if your winter is not particularly cold. And in January, we have a big surprise, but I'm keeping the wraps on that one for right now. But I assure you, you'll be interested, and you'll be pulled in. And before we get out of here, I want to remind you, you can email us at weeklyspooky@gmail.com and even submit a story of your own if you want to. And some of you have, and thank you for writing in. Because next year, we're going to need a whole lot of stories. So for myself, for my producer Dan Wilder, and for my composer Ray Mattis, I'll talk at you later.
Thank you for listening. Make sure to find your way back next week. But for now, you are safe. Trust me.